full of open space and birds.
Yeah. So where are you walking now? In which city or countryside?
I'm in Newbury, on the north side of Newbury, and in a very historic area, actually. Mm. And what's very interesting is that I'm about to go by a church that dates to, oh, probably the 12th century. Mm. But before too long, I'm going to be walking across the campus of the world headquarters of Vodafone.
Wow.
Except, you know, there's no one there right now.
So what time is it now?
Well, it's an hour earlier than it is for you.
Okay, so it's still sunny a bit.
Yeah, it's turned out, although it was snowing this morning, it's warmed up.
Awesome. So I was thinking
No, go ahead.
Yes, I was thinking that we can have our talk 30 minutes and then see if the audience wants to be part of this and share with us their thoughts, reflection, and so on. What do you think?
That's perfect.
Yes.
I'm going to discuss the points that I usually discuss.
Yeah.
Which you know a little. So.
Yes, and now I'm also recording this, so we can publish it on Urbanistica podcast as well.
Very good.
Yes. What do you think? Should we start?
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
Yes, I'm ready, and I think let's welcome everybody here. Thank you so much for joining. And this is our third Clubhouse event, Urbanistica Clubhouse event, and today we have a great guest. Chuck, you were part of a great episode as well. Good to have you again here. So thank you so much for joining.
Oh, thank you, Mr.
So how are you doing today? We talked before that you're taking a walk and we hear the birds singing around you.
Yeah, and I suppose it's relevant, very relevant to the topic. Because, as you know, I'm originally an American, but I've lived in the United Kingdom for a few years, and this is the first major gateway out of this third lockdown today. And today is the day that all of the non-essential shops open, and gyms open, and you can go get a haircut. And things have been quite regimented in the United Kingdom and in England in particular here. And so we're returning to a bit of normalcy, and I am out watching some after school football as I walk by a school.
Nice.
But I was just telling you, I think this is to the point of what is character. Okay, what is character coming out of the the pandemic? Well, I just walked by a 12th century church.
Can you have the mic? Can you have the mic closer to you so?
Yes. How's
yes,
that?
Yes.
Can you hear me any better?
Yeah.
Okay. What I was going to say is I just walked by a 12th century church, which some people would say, oh, that's character, isn't it? But now, after about 3 minutes later, I'm about to walk across a technology campus, the world headquarters of Vodafone. And so that shows you how character changes over time, particularly in communities with a long history, and that both are valid.
Mm.
And so that people who think of, I feel strongly that people who think of character as just fairy tale heritage or what would be called in the United States, historic preservation, are really missing a lot of the richness that stands behind our places. And as you know, I've gone on for 280 pages on this topic recently for my new book. So
Chuck, let us start with a short highlight about you, so the listeners can follow your story. So tell us about you.
Okay. Well, I guess what's always on my mind is this book that has recently been released called Sustaining a city's culture and character. But I'd say more in more depth. I was once what's called a land use and environmental lawyer in the United States for many years. And then always, because I also have a degree in urban planning, I always taught law to planning students on the side. That led to about 10 or 11 years of writing articles about cities, which has grown into 3 books and which grew into the way you and I know each other, Mustafa, to my being a visiting scholar at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm, where you went to school. And yeah. So I'm a recovering lawyer who's part academic and part author, part photographer, and tends to concentrate on the types of issues that we opened up talking about.
That's awesome and good to have you. So let's start. What do you mean by urban character? Can you just define it for us?
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm sure the audience would agree that as I said a moment ago, urban character is not just a heritage building or an ancient, charming English church in a smaller town. Urban character is really highly dependent upon context. And so when we talk about sustaining character, we're not just talking about architecture. We're talking about cultures. We're talking about the natural environment, which may make up a large part of a setting. And I think certainly, as everyone is saying, you know, coming out of the pandemic, we have a tremendous opportunity to think about these things and how is it that we will reinvent our places. And there's a wide range of dialogue about how we must reinvent them equitably. And so I want to have a very broad definition of character, because I think that is what is contemporarily quite important. Now, there's always going to be a visual component to it, but well, I'll stop there. I think that answers your question. I can keep going. Yeah, but go ahead.
So how did we think the urban character? Let's talk before the pandemic. And
Go ahead.
Because later we will talk about how do we need to rethink the urban character.
Well, my surmise is that too many people used character in an architectural way, and that, of course, it includes many things. Character, what I was starting to say a moment ago, is that, you know, even architectural character isn't just architectural, because obviously buildings reflect the people who build them. But I think maybe what I'm at war against is this sort of, you know, call it elitist if you will, but this sense that, oh, you know, we must be authentic and we must be charming and we must create communities that you know, fulfill an image of what we want them to be. And I think that risks, as many people have written and said, when you begin to get into concepts like authentic character or authenticity, it risks gentrification. It risks a sense of the storybook that is perhaps oriented more towards tourists than it is towards people who live there. And so I'll give an extreme example. That one could have a setting with a tremendous natural landscape history that is not readily discernible. It could have a tremendous history as, you know, you name it. There may have been a town there once that is no longer. There may be family memories that only are preserved within families that are no longer present. What I advocate for, and this will, I guess this goes into, I think, probably your later questions, I'm thinking about places so holistically that character means a very three-dimensional view, if you will, of what a place is. So, you know, the extreme would be a place that looks like an empty, say an empty field, but it has a vast history. Maybe, a, you know, 50 years ago, 500 years ago, 5,000 years ago. I think we need to take the time to understand that. It may not be incorporated in any further change or development, but we need to understand where a place has come from. Mm.
And do you think the pandemic gave us the opportunity to understand more about the places that we are interested in?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you know about, and probably people who are for the moment listening and maybe conversing later, they know about, you know about the, like the slow cities movement of the last 20 years, the idea that we, you know, from an economic development standpoint, we honor local traditions, local cultures, local foods, local crops, local ways of life, and we don't just immediately adopt a fast-paced way of being about the places we visit, we immerse in them. And that's what I think the pandemic has also allowed us inadvertently to do, because we have been caught in our places, usually, more than we are accustomed to. And so, as so many people are saying, it's been pause for reflection. And while it has certainly accelerated many trends that are, you know, like online goods and, you know, perhaps increased walkability and, you know, many, many good and bad things, it's also an opportunity to reflect more calmly and more immersively about where we are, where we've been sitting, avoiding each other, you know?
Yeah. So tell me about your experience, how the pandemic allowed you to build a stronger relationship with the places, because also you started the great YouTube and Instagram.
Well, you know, I, like you, I've always been someone who has been very interested in engaging people and thinking and talking about cities. And I used to, because I'm so much older than you, not wiser, just older. you know, when I started, the printing press was just starting, and you know, when I started taking time away from being a lawyer and writing about cities, you know, it was 2009, and digital publications were still, you know, they were mature, but they were still launching in the sense that it became possible for professionals like me to write for a local newspaper or that kind of thing, right? And so it was the blog then. And so I've always done this. And so for many years I had a blog.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then I had, and my, but my blogs were always very visual. Mm. And in the context, to answer your question specifically, even though I'd written books before, I hadn't really done this. This time, being caught with a delayed publication deadline, and you know, in the third lockdown here in England, I started a short video series. There are too many great podcasters out there already, such as yourself, and
Thank you.
You know, I decided that I would do just short videos about the concepts in the book. And so what that led me to do is to, as you kindly noticed, to make videos that were anywhere between, say, 2 or 3 minutes with just myself, or videos that also had interviews that were dropped into them about the varying elements of culture and character and context and what they might all mean. And so I was able, through the pandemic, to really look at, say, in Newbury, or when I go back to London, some settings that perhaps were very storybook and physically oriented towards that more historic sense of character that I spoke of earlier. But then I would immediately take the camera to something that showed that character in a place is just far, far more than the ruins of a castle or, you know, an historic home or whatever.
But tell me why it's important for you to share this with other people. I mean, it's first we talked about, it's about you building a relationship, a stronger relationship with the places. But now you're taking it one step further, that you want to share this relationship with other people and show them.
Well, thank you for asking. I mean, even when I was a lawyer and advocating for and against development projects, I always felt that understanding a place was very important, because it would provide a more successful basis for a legal position. Because so many people, when they go work on a project, you know, they never visit the site.
Yeah.
That's not just lawyers. It can ironically even be planners, you know?
That's true.
And so what I wanted, I used to talk to my lawyer colleagues about getting, you know, understanding a place and understanding the principles behind a place. I think what I'm trying to do now is some of the same, but also I do believe that some of the, I think this is more of what you were getting at, some of the movements that are currently currently very popular within, you know, within the overall field of urban planning, or the, you know, the area of urbanism, they tend to be movements that are like many populist movements, they tend to involve people who are very active and enthusiastic, which is great. Yeah. And they tend to involve principles, however, that I believe are sometimes too one size fits all. And so I guess what I'm trying to do is help people understand how important it is for them to immerse in their own environments before they make particular recommendations or decisions. Mm-hmm. And that is not easy to do, because we always want to move quickly, right? You know, a tactical urbanist technique to help establish, say, a crosswalk where the government is not pursuing a crosswalk, or bike lanes, is to go out and do it yourself, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. I mean, people get confused because they think I'm being critical of that underlying concept. No, I'm not. I'm saying make sure that it's in the context of where you are. It may be that in a given setting, advocating a different way with government or with, through, you know, other decision makers is a better way to go. Don't, you know, be very careful about practices that are borrowed from elsewhere, and make sure they align with where you are. And so that's why, if I may, I mean, the book has these two very flexible methods.
You can also very short tell the audience about which book are you referring to.
Oh yeah, the new book. I'm sorry. Sustaining a City's Culture and Character. It's built around a method called LEARN: look, engage, assess, review, and negotiate. And this is not, you know, a rigid formulation aimed at generating data per se. It's just sort of principles to practice by. And if you really think through the flexible meaning of those words on a project, you're going to really get to the bottom of what you need to learn, you know, no pun intended, what you need to learn about where you are and where you're operating and who you should be dealing with and negotiating solutions between parties and so on. But I also have something that I call, you know, and these are big words maybe, and I've already said that words are dangerous, but still, I call them context keys. And they have to do with familiarity, congruity, and integrity.
Okay, and can you share with us more what does these words mean?
Exactly. So familiarity, if you're, you know, I'm saying that let's use a solution of a very simple solution, like you know, an understanding a public square and how it's working. And public, you know, public space is so important today and for all of the reasons that people discuss. What I'm saying is there may be qualities of the space that are familiar based on somewhere we've been before. You know, space X may remind you of space Y from your childhood. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's familiarity. Mm. Congruity. It is an analysis, a casual analysis of, well, is there really a relationship between this place from your childhood and where you are right now? Are the things you are assuming are going to happen here really valid? Or is that just a familiar memory that you're imposing on this? And then integrity means that you've really achieved the identity of the place itself, the current place, and you're not just fabricating based on familiar experiences or fantasy or whatever. Now these are big words, and I don't mean them to be controlling or exclusive. What I want these to be guideposts for people to really immerse in a place and understand it. And I think, going back to your other question, I think the pandemic has allowed us a much more immersive opportunity to much more immersively understand a place. If we want outdoor dining to remain and not just be a temporary pandemic or immediate post-pandemic phenomena in those places that don't have it. If we want the new bike lanes to remain, we have to think about the alignment between, whether they're going to work in a particular place versus another place. That draws in all these other factors like weather and geographies and, you know, all sorts of things that go back to the earlier part of the conversation about the true three-dimensional character of a place.
Mm-hmm. So how does urban character mean after the pandemic? I mean, you talked pre and during and your experience. So
yeah.
How do you think
this
should be after the pandemic?
Well, I think when we talk about retaining or understanding urban character after the pandemic, needless to say, I'm going to say, I mean, whether you use my magic big words or not, you know, it should be an immersive exercise. It should be highly contextual. Now, one of the leaders of the placemaking movement, Ethan Kent.
Yeah.
I think he's irritated with me because he said he's never known placemaking not to be contextual, because it relies so much on what the local people want. And, you know, his father, Fred, always talked about the locals being the experts. And in order to get things right, you have to turn them upside down before they're right side up. Okay, I agree with that. But to advocate a placemaking solution without understanding whether it is going to fit in a different context than it's being imported from takes a little bit of work. And that's what I hope as we come out of the pandemic, we do. I think we have an opportunity to slow down a little bit and think a little bit more carefully. I don't see that much evidence that it's happening, by the way, because I think there's a lot of people out to share messages, just like I am. I think there are, you know, I think there are consultants who are out to, you know, earn money as a result of the pandemic, quite honestly. And I see people moving very, very quickly with notions and solutions that sound a lot alike. And that could be okay, or it might not lead to long-term solutions. So to answer your question concisely, I would argue that post-pandemic, we should continue some of the careful in-place immersion that we've had the benefit of during the pandemic. You commented early on, Chuck, are you outside? I hear birds. Well, there's lots of talk out there about how people have rediscovered birdsong during the pandemic, and that's a very good thing, right? So am I being clear? You don't have to agree with me. I just wonder if I'm
clear. So you think there are so many solutions that fits to the short term, but not for the long term, and these solutions are mainly just to earn money.
That's an extreme interpretation. Yes. Sometimes I do think that. Sometimes I do think that. Sometimes I don't, because sometimes the short-term solutions are the way to a demonstration project that can be absolutely brilliant. But I think that, for instance, folks from, you know, in the new book, I talk about the experiences of the Gale firm in South America with the Villa 31 project.
Can you have the mic a bit closer, please?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I talk about the experience of the Gale, Jan Gale originally, the Gale firm out of Copenhagen. And they, of course, do work around the world. And they were working in South America on a project called Villa 31. And their obligation, their task was to take a newer part of the city the city was Buenos Aires, which is not well connected to the more modern city. And this often happens when cities are trying to integrate arrival cities or, you know, casual settlements on the periphery. They found that a physical solution, a simple physical solution, was only part of the problem or part of the solution. You know, putting bridges over highways. Yeah, of course. Or, you know, creating walkable, and those could be pedestrian bridges or whatever. But also they had to learn a tremendous amount about what created a sense of community in the city, the disconnected, let's call it an arrival type city, with all of its small spaces and its, you know, natural human interrelationships and so on and so forth. I'm saying that they learned that to do a successful job, they really, really, really had to understand the patterns of both places, and that importing ideas from elsewhere, some may apply, but some may not.
Yes. Yes, I understand. So if we want to rethink places now after the pandemic, what are the elements that we should think about?
Well, I think it's easy to say that maybe the pandemic taught us that we really want to be, you know, that sidewalk dining is a good thing, and that street, you know, lives that flow into public living rooms, so to speak, are a good thing, and that public spaces are good things, and that automobiles should be discouraged or should be deprioritized. That goes without saying. But I think there's many, many other aspects that we can and should learn as a result of this time. And some of it is very, very simple. Mm. And that has to do with, I mentioned earlier, by way of example, birdsong, the importance of integrated natural spaces, because we've learned to see and listen and hear the city with fewer automobiles. We also have learned more about the relationships between the natural and the built environment, and to look hard at those relationships. I think we've learned through a tremendous sense of loss the importance of relationships and listening to one another. And one thing that I had already written a lot about is not just the listening that is the stuff of a public hearing on a project, but that, the variety of co-creation activities that have, can, and will take place in terms of helping plot a city's future. So that, I would just say that again, the pandemic is accelerating things that were happening anyway, co-creation being one of them, but really honoring the expertise of people who actually live in a place, who understand the patterns of a place, who understand what might be done to avoid gentrifying a place and help with some internal reinvestment of both monetary and emotional capital. So I think the pandemic has just given us pause to look, listen, and feel the world around us, while not denying how it has accelerated many trends, some of them being quite positive from the standpoint of sustainability and other things.
What are the other factors? Are there others?
Other factors
other elements to rethink the places after, or reinvent the places?
Well, I think that I primarily, so far, I've sort of endorsed ongoing reinvention of public spaces and transportation networks. I've endorsed the value of human capital, listening, local expertise, and co-creation. I think it's time also to incorporate, the natural features or environment, the natural environment speaks, and adopting natural environmental features, as we've heard about in Paris and many other cities, speaks also to climate change, doesn't it? I think that there are also other aspects that fall within the areas I've listed already, because with rethinking transportation networks, this is where you get into bike lanes and, more walkable places and so on and so forth. But I've probably exhausted the litany of urbanistic, the things that urbanists like to talk about. But I want to stress that again, there needs to be a more careful calibration than perhaps some people assume, because all of these things are not going to work the same way everywhere.
Exactly. But do you think, are we really going to reinvent the places, or we will just like, you know, after the pandemic, we will say, okay, that's fine, back to the normal, and we do what we used to do and like really forget about what we learned?
Well, history would suggest that maybe you're onto something, you know, because after a couple of years, people may forget. However, I do think I'd take issue with your, I'm more of an optimist than that, because I really think that what has happened is, whereas some of these things that were evolving anyway, let's just say one thing I didn't mention was probably what's an inevitable tilt towards live work environments, mixed use environments, you know, filling empty shops that could no longer sustain themselves during the pandemic and aren't coming back, and replacing them with something new, which might be housing closer to work, or internet showrooms in the front and shipping operations in the back, or however the high street or main streets are being re-envisioned. To answer your point, I think one thing is certain, and that is that this pandemic accelerated a lot of trends that were already underway by many years. And so I would say, well, even if it's more of the same, we've suddenly traveled 5 or 10 years in a year.
Wow. Yeah, I agree with you, because the thing why I am asking, now I've been doing podcasts for more than a year, and I started almost during the COVID, the pandemic, and you know, many people says, okay, we need to reflect, we need to pause, we need to stop our autopilot, we need to think. But I think that we are going to forget what we learned. And now I'm trying to get some advices about, okay, how can we be more serious about what we learned and actually consider it when we plan and design our cities? So do you have any advices that, okay, how can we just remember what we learned and really consider it?
If I may, I'll just, so I'll answer the question. I know that at least one person has their hand up. I think what I was saying, Mustafa, is that this new book I wrote before any of us knew the pandemic was going to happen in many ways. Most of the book was written beforehand, and then I went back and readjusted some things. But in the book, the idea was that, you know, I had a section which said, imagine that the world around you as you know it disappears, and all the paths that you're used to traveling and so on and so forth just go away. How would you reinvent the city to your liking? You know, if you were in Athens, you're in Athens, you're not going back to ancient Greece. You know, what would you do? And so that was the opportunity to go into this deep dive about how to understand a place, which I've only outlined so far today. And so I think, to answer your question, it's not just we take time to pause. There are methods of diligence to really, really understand a place before going forward. And, you know, some people will follow them, maybe some will not, but it is through the very questions you've asked about what is character, what is authenticity, that you suddenly realize these words mean nothing unless you put them in context.
And Chuck, can you give us like 3 takeaway messages to all the listeners?
Sure, there's still a few listeners here, I see. And I think that they'll be similar to the longer podcast that we did. I really urge everyone to invest the time in understanding their surroundings, whatever the scale of their surroundings might be, and to, upon receiving a message that sounds like a good idea, think hard about whether it can and will work in your place. Number two, I think something that I always have strongly believed in, as I said, is undertaking a documentation exercise for your place, be it with, it's very easy to do these days with, say, a journal or a written journal or Instagram or, you know, videoing. All of these things are possible, and you can think about what it is a physical environment actually represents other than itself. And then thirdly, I think I'll go against myself and say that there are some things that require some immediate attention and, you know, maybe some demonstration projects and so on and so forth. And what should those be? Where can we perhaps affect change on a more dramatic scale simply by doing small things by example? And perhaps in many cases they're what comes most naturally between people and where they live. It may be shopping locally, it may be participating in some sort of neighborhood improvement project or tactical project, but those are my three.
Yes, thank you so much, and I'm really happy that we talked again. And yeah, thanks a lot for sharing your reflections and also some of the methods that we that helped us to reflect about the places. So yeah, again, I'm happy to talk to you, and hopefully we will have more Clubhouse events in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much for thinking of me again for this. And anyone who wishes can feel free to get in touch as well.
Yes. By the way, can you just share with us your Instagram account username?
My Instagram and my Twitter are at crwolflaw, crwolflaw.
Awesome. And they are actually linked to your Clubhouse profile, so people can easy.
Yeah, I guess they are. Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Awesome. So thank you so much, and wish you a great evening for you and for all the listeners. Bye.
Yeah, same to everyone else. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.